Hi, today is Monday, August the 21st, 2006. This is the CWF Game Discussions Podcast, and I am your host, Jonathan Reinhardt. I want to say that this weekend was a nice warm one, and had a lot of fun, had the weekend off. I hope you enjoyed your weekend too. We will be starting a new format with today's podcast. We want to mix things up, try them out a little bit. And in order to know what works, we need to hear back from you, so we do need your feedback. Please keep that in mind as you listen to the show. As always, you can get our contact information, my contact information, at the end of the show. I mentioned it, and also it appears in our show notes. I want to mention that in today's podcast, we will be exclusively talking about the upcoming new release to Warhammer Fantasy. It is the 7th edition, and in particular, we are talking about the box set Battle for Skull Pass. As always, you can find our show notes and all the information and much more by going to our website, which is wargamingforums.com. And everything is on there. We have our show notes, our RSS feed. You can find links to other podcasts and blogs that we like. Everything that we enjoy, you can find there. I want to mention that our sponsor for today's show is Akko Hosting, and they are our own host. They are incredible. They start at $3.55 a month. That's $3.55 a month for web hosting. You can find them by going to akkohosting.com. That is akkohosting.com. And you can find the link in our show notes. As I said, I want to thank everyone who have been listening to us. In our first few shows, we had a number of people listening, and I am greatly appreciative of that. But let's try to make this show a little bit shorter than some of ours. I have a tendency to be a little talkative, and today I hope to remedy that. So as I said, we will be discussing the new edition of Warhammer Fantasy. It is 7th edition, and they're coming up with a box set called Battle for Skull Pass. It seems like they got the idea for when they revamped 40K, which is Warhammer 40,000. They came up with a box set called the Battle for Makra, and that focused on Space Marines and Tyranids. The Battle for Skull Pass will be focusing on the Orcs and Goblins, commonly called Greenskins, and the Dwarfs. The latest issue of White Dwarf, which would be in the U.S., White Dwarf number 320, it's a September 06 issue, spends a lot of time talking about the new edition that will be coming out. And in particular, I just want to discuss some of the things mentioned in an article with the games designer for the new edition, who is Alessio Cavatore, and he talks about a few rule changes that I think will greatly impact and alter the way that Warhammer Fantasy is played. To start off, I'm going to take them out of order from how he has them in his article, and I do recommend that you purchase this White Dwarf to read the article in depth. There's a whole section even larger than what we will talk about that deals with 7th edition. But what I want to start off with deals with magic, and I know people have said that the current edition of Fantasy, which would be 6th edition, is too prone. It relies too heavily on magic. It's more times than I can even think of when I've heard or seen how powerful magic plays into the game. And Alessio tried to temper that down. In particular, he noticed, and it's something I've always noticed as well, that people will have multiple spellcasters, but they only cast spells with the highest level spellcaster. So for example, say you're playing Chaos, and you have a Chaos Sorcerer. He's a level 4 Chaos Sorcerer, so he's maxed out. He would actually be a Chaos Lord of some sort. And you have a couple lower level spellcasters, sorcerers, level 1 and level 2, but you don't really do anything to bump their levels up, because you're using them as caddies, so to speak. You just want to get the extra power dice. You want to use them to house the dispel scrolls, that sort of thing. he was greatly bothered by the fact that people would do that. They would have all these other ones. He uses the term batteries. I call them, you know, like spell caddies. And he was greatly disturbed by that fact because he felt that, you know, why are you getting these other lower level magic users if they are not going to cast any spells? So he greatly altered the magic phase of the game. And the way he did this was, it's actually kind of ingenious, and I don't agree with it entirely. But what he did was, he says that you have a common pool of dice for your magic, your power dice. They're your basic level that you get, and say if you have different, you get extra power dice because of regiments, for example. If you're playing Chaos, you can play... it's a particular army, and I know I'm going to mispronounce it, so I do apologize for that, but Zints, and you play in that, they're infamous for having, you can max out with 2,000 with the Chaos Lord and Dragon, and you get like something like, 40-something power dice or whatever, I think. And the way you get that is because if you give each regiment a mark for that Chaos Lord, you get an extra power dice for your magic, because he is, well, it, rather, we don't really know the gender of all the Chaos Gods, but it is very magical. It's into magic, it's in tune, it's tied in, you know. And so you would be able to get these bonuses, and you can still use those form your common magic power dice pool. And you also start off with a basic number depending on whatever. But now, whatever power dice each spellcaster contributes, they only get to use what they contribute in addition to the basic pool. So, for example, if I have a level 4 spellcaster and I have a level 2 spellcaster, the level 2 spellcaster cannot use the power dice that the level 4 spellcaster would contribute. So, if one person contributes, say, 4 power dice and the other one contributes 2, the guy who contributes 2 can only use his 2 power dice. He can't use a 4 power dice from the other guy. This changes drastically, I feel. It changes drastically how the magic phase will work, and hopefully it will temper it down a little bit. I have a concern with this in that you have some armies that rely so heavily on magic, not offensively in the sense of like high elves, but just to kind of survive. And the first one that comes to my mind are Vampire Counts. The reason why that army comes to my mind is I play Vampire Counts. I have an army of Sylvania army that I am working on, and I will hope to discuss it in the podcast. I know Army of Sylvania is not turning legal anymore, but the basic Vampire Counts army relies heavily on having a vampire counter lord, and you need to have necromancers. You need them to bolster support and to help you raise skeleton and other undead. But if you're not able to share your power dice for this particular army, you have greatly diminished their capacity. And at the same time, if you look at it from a commercial standpoint, if an army does not have a sufficient capacity where the customers and the players feel that it can perform well in a game, they will not purchase it. So in effect, this one basic change, it's a minor alteration in that, you know, it doesn't take a lot of text to change, has killed an entire army. I don't think that people will purchase Vampire Counts armies as much as they have, and they haven't been purchasing them that much to begin with. And there are a few other changes I want to talk about, in particular, not with magic. Well, actually, there's one more with magic. There's something, well, it's not magic, it's a break test, but it's called Insane Courage. And it's always been a house rule where I've played, and I know other places use it as house rules. But now, when you are rolling for a break test, if you roll snake eyes, which is double ones on your dice, you automatically pass your test, no matter whether there's special rules like fear, or there's other modifiers or whatever. This way that no matter what, you always have some chance, no matter how improbable it is, but some chance that you will pass that break test, and you will be able to stay on and, you know, just kind of grasp at some straws. And that's something I like. I like to see that they have taken that, formalized it, and made it part of the actual whole game. So they are making some positive steps here. Overall, I know that with the rules, Alessio has said that he didn't want to change much because he didn't want to invalidate the army books that are out there. And he says that he's only invalidated one magic item and one special rule. I don't know if that's true or not because I haven't seen the rule book. But if you if or when you get the rule book and you notice that there's more items that have been changed or invalidated, please let us know, because he wants to know, and we will definitely contact him and let him know. In the past, back when we ran the Wargaming Forums forum online, it was a Chromium's Wargaming Forums, we submitted this very big petition to Games Workshop. A lot of people signed in depth. We mailed it in, emailed it and stuff to Games Workshop headquarters about their price changes and stuff that we were unhappy with. There was a lot of us doing it. And although they still raised prices, they waited a while. So I like to think that we had a part in that, and we are very vocal about this. There is another area that I think will greatly impact the game that has been altered, and that is movement. And in particular, it is fleeing movement. When you have a unit that flees, you now have to flee directly away from the strongest enemy that you're facing, and they're the ones that have the highest unit strength. After that, you have to flee towards the closest table edge. But here's the twist. In the past, you could flee around hills and woods and around your units and stuff. Now you have to travel in a direct, straight line. So if that means you go through a wood, you go through that wood and you suffer movement penalties. If you go through a unit of your own, it gets really interesting, because you can force your unit to take a panic test. And it actually makes sense if you think about it. You have a unit of warriors somewhere, and they just got their butt kicked. They fought someone, another unit or something, and they're like, oh my god, everyone's dying. I'm getting out of here. A bunch of other people are like, oh, he's running away. We gotta get out of here. Ah! And they just flee. And if they run through another friendly unit, their other friendly unit's gonna say, whoa, what the hell's going on? Why are these guys going, and why am I staying here? I don't think I should stay here. I'm gonna go. The only time that your other unit is going to flee is if the fleeing unit has unit strength of 5 or higher. And I know that was a little confusing, so I just want to step back and go over it one more time, a little slower. You have a unit that is fleeing. It has to travel in a straight line when it flees. If it flees through, if it travels through a friendly unit, that second unit, the friendly unit, has to take a panic test if and only if unit A, the fleeing unit, has a unit strength of 5 or more. And an example of that would be, you have, I don't know, something like you play an empire, and you have a unit of greatswords, and in front of them you have a man-eater, an ogre man-eater. Well, the ogre man-eater is a unit strength of 3. So if he's facing off chaos warriors or, you know, a bunch of skeletons or whatever, and he gets his butt kicked, and he flees, he's going to have to flee directly in a straight line directly through that unit of greatswords. But whereas he's unit strength 3, he won't cause the greatsword to take a panic test. And that's really important to remember. I think it's incredible. It's a great way to take real life and put it into the game. Excuse me. I'm sorry for that. Also, I want to mention that they have changed how lone characters are dealt with. And this is not something I've ever actually come across, but I talked to one of the people I know who games a lot, and I've mentioned him before. His name is Philip. He lives